And we're now joined by Tom Rock from Newsday, who will be out there watching practice today. Tom, good to see you. How's everything going, bud?
John, I'm doing great. I'm excited about the start of OTAs here. A lot of volunteers around the building because obviously that's not a mandatory event, but it seems like attendance was pretty good yesterday, and we're going to get a good look at some of the a good first look at some of the people and the offense that the Giants are going to be using this season.
Now, well, let's start with that. What are some of the really the first couple things you're going to be watching for when you get out there on the practice field today?
The left ankle of one certain quarterback. Mr. Eli Manning, that's certainly the biggest pressing issue for the Giants right now, and from all reports and all the pictures that we saw on Giants.com yesterday, it seems like he's doing fine and moving around and taking a lot of snaps. So that'll be number one on my checklist. Then you go down the offensive line, you see how that rebuilt unit is going to look. J.D. Walton maybe at center. Jeff Schwartz at guard, I'm sure, who's going to be playing left tackle. I know yesterday it was James Brewer. And you look at the rookies, and you start to look at how Odell Beckham is doing and fitting in with the offense, and how they're starting to use him with Victor Cruz and Reuben Randall, and how those three are going to interact in the offense. And then you look at the defensive side of the ball, and you see how that secondary is going to come together with Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie, Prince Amukamara. How are they going to use the safeties? Are they going to use three safeties this early in OTAs? Maybe not. They'll probably just go with two. And we'll keep an eye on how Stevie Brown's knee is looking too, because he's coming off of a pretty traumatic injury also.
Now, one thing I think I thought was interesting from yesterday, and you guys saw that on Giants.com, we reported it, that Weston Richburg wasn't not working with the starting unit. He was with the second unit, and he was a guard and not center. Considering how the organization talked about the strengths that he had, and they seemed a lot of them were specific to, you know, playing center and calling out protections and being smart, I found it interesting that he would start out as a guard with the second unit.
Yeah, well, they really like his intelligence, and he's probably a center moving forward. But I think for right now, they probably wanted to get him situated a little more than just throw him in there. They're also looking, I'm sure, at Chris Snee at that guard position and wondering, you know, obviously hoping that he can make it through the season, but wondering if he's going to be able to, because he hasn't been able to play at that level for much of the last few years. So if Snee has to go down for an extended period of time or something like that, you know, Richburg might be the best answer there at guard. He's an interior lineman. You always hear guard and center is sort of interchangeable. We've always heard that Chris can take snaps at center if he needed to. I guess the door swings both ways, and you can go from center to guard.
And you wonder if by putting Richburg at guard right away, it's reflective of how confident they are in him to kind of step in and play center right away if he has to. Maybe they think he's so intelligent, he doesn't necessarily need the number of reps there that a normal rookie would need right off the bat.
Right, and I'm sure they also want to get a good look at J.D. Walton and see what he's bringing, because he hasn't been on a football field in a long time. He hasn't played a lot. Dallas Reynolds, they kind of have an idea of what they have in him. He's a former starter with the Eagles, so he can certainly play the position in a pinch. And then you have the rookie Richburg. So the three good centers. It's going to be an interesting battle. They're not going to keep all three, I don't think.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting too. You know, you mentioned the rookies, Tom, and I think a lot of times, you know, fans get very excited about these rookies, but I think teams generally, especially with the OTAs, these guys have only been in the building 2 weeks now, so they're still behind a lot of these starters. Even if they believe they're the best player at some of these positions, they'll start them on the second and third team just so they can kind of get going slowly and not give them too much too fast.
I saw a lot of Odell Beckham pictures yesterday. It looked like he was catching passes from the backup quarterbacks and probably running with the second or third unit. We also saw the videos of David Wilson playing with the second and third units. So, and also at this point in OTAs, they're not going to throw a lot of three receiver sets out there. They're not going to do a lot of fancy things. It's going to be basically, you know, tight end, running back, fullback, two wide receivers, and just going through the motions and getting the cadence and the plays down. And so, obviously, with two wide receivers, you're looking at Randall and Cruz out there. Beckham, some of the other guys are going to have to take a back seat, and they're going to have to earn their spots. And that's always been the way that the Giants have handled things. with their rookies in the past is that they don't, they usually don't throw the throw those young guys out in the preseason even into starting roles and with the ones. That's why it becomes such a big deal. I remember last year when Justin Pugh started made his first appearance with the first unit in a training camp practice.
It was a big deal,
and he was going up against Justin Tuck, and yeah, actually, I think he wound up getting a concussion in that day.
I think he did, actually.
he missed about a week of practice after that, but then he came back and obviously found his way into the starting lineup. So where these guys start out in the OTAs and where they start in mini camps and even where they start in training camp is not going to be indicative of where they are once the regular season begins.
We are joined by Tom Rock. He covers the Giants for Newsday. And, you know, Tom, talking about how the Giants are going to set up this offense, I think one of the things you can tell from OTAs is some of the formations they're going to use. And we've seen, you know, from the Packers in years past that they're a team with a lot of varied formations. They've used two tight ends. We've seen full house backfields for them with three guys back there. We've seen four wide receiver sets. And I think this is a good way to get a first taste of some of the formations and general approach that McAdoo is going to have to the offense.
One of the things that fans were always crying for with Kevin Gilbride, well, there were a lot of things, but one of the things that
that is true words never been spoken.
Right? Nobody was crying for the two Super Bowl rings, but there were a lot of complaints. But anyway, one of the things that I heard a lot about is, why don't they use two running backs? Why don't they use Brandon Jacobs and Ahmad Bradshaw at the same time? You know, why don't they get these two guys in the backfield together? I don't know. Maybe McAdoo will bring that kind of a dynamic. They certainly have enough running backs. They certainly have enough guys that they like to carry the ball, guys who they consider three down backs. Maybe you throw them in there together and see what happens. You got some guys that can catch passes. If you can get David Wilson in some space out of the backfield, that's certainly an option. Go from there. I'm also going to be looking at with the offense, not only the formations but the pace. I'm very curious to see how quickly this offense gets up to the line and gets going, and what the protocols are going to be for the Eli Manning or whoever the quarterback is to make checks at the line of scrimmage, how quickly they snap the ball. That was another thing that fans always groaned about was the play clock winding down and snapping the ball with 3-2-1. I'm very interested to see how Ben McAdoo's offense is going to handle that, what kind of pace they're going to be like. Are they going to be at the breakneck speed of the Eagles? Are they going to be a little more no huddle, just at the line of scrimmage like the Broncos, or are they going to be like the Packers and kind of come up and try and go with a little misdirection, a little quirkiness in the formations and attack.
Now, the one thing I've been trying to warn fans about, and you know, I'm sure you're getting all the questions on Twitter that I get, is that, look, OTAs, these guys aren't even wearing pads. Mm-hmm. There's strict rules about contact that, you know, sometimes are followed more times than others. We saw, you know, shots of the Cowboys practice when Sean Lee got hurt, and we see guys doing full-out blocking on the offensive line. But the rules are no contact. There are no pads. What you can really see and analyze in these practices, you know, while the competition for positions is ongoing, you really can't know anything until these guys start hitting a little bit.
This is about them. This is more about the players learning about the offense than about us learning about the players. And it's not a this isn't a show to put on to say here's what we are, here's who we have. This is a learning process for the players, and that's why I was very glad that the Giants drafted a wide receiver in the first round, because it's makes it interesting to be able to write about somebody that can participate in these things. And you can say, oh well, Beckham, you can see his speed, you can see his hands, you can do all those things. But you know, when Justin Pugh was a first round draft pick last year and he came in to OTAs, who knows what you're watching? You're just kind of watching them bump into each other.
Yeah, pretty much.
And they're not really using their hands, and they're just working their feet a little bit. So it's hard to get a sense of exactly what they're capable of. With the wide, this is a, you know, it's a shorts and t-shirt wide receiver cornerback showcase, really, is what these OTAs and mini camps are. You get a little bit. I know yesterday Jason Pierre-Paul apparently had a very strong practice, batted down a couple of passes, almost had an interception at the line of scrimmage. That's good to see from him, but you're not going to get a sense of whether or not his pass rush is is on point or where he is against the run, because obviously it's just like I said, they're just playing bumper cars out here.
And I also made a joke earlier in the show that, you know, James Brewer was lining up as, you know, first team left tackle, so you got to take, you know, who they're going up against too into consideration as well.
Right, exactly. So yeah, Jason Pierre-Paul isn't going to see a lot of James Brewers, I don't think.
Exactly.
Certainly not in one-on-one situations, like I'm sure yesterday was.
And you mentioned this being, you know, a showcase for corners and receivers. It's also going to be a showcase for Ryan Nassib, one of the places where we're going to have a lot of competition. And I could tell you, Tom, watching yesterday, Ryan Nassib got a lot more snaps than Josh Freeman did, a lot more snaps than Curtis Painter did. I got to imagine, and you tell me if you agree or disagree, that the Giants would love not to keep three quarterbacks each year. In their perfect world, Ryan Nassib wins that backup job, and they go to war with him and Eli Manning next year, and they can use that third quarterback spot on somebody else in a different position.
The Giants will probably never admit it, but some of their problems last year stemmed from having three quarterbacks because they weren't able to keep other athletes at other positions. And they weren't able to keep an extra offensive lineman and defensive backs, and the whole thing just trickles down onto the roster. So, obviously, keeping two quarterbacks is the ideal for the Giants, and the theory being that if you have to go to the third quarterback, you're probably in serious trouble anyway.
Yeah.
So there's no sense in having that guy on the roster. You know, there'll be a quarterback on the street you could just pick up at any moment. And obviously they want Ryan Nassib to win that job because he's their draft pick. He's the guy that they hand selected. You know, I don't know that he's necessarily the heir to Eli Manning, but he's certainly the guy that they want to be behind him. And then they brought in the extra guys because Eli may not have been ready for this. And then Josh Freeman was available, so they added him. And Curtis Painter's coming off of his own knee surgery, his knee procedure. So there's some question marks about him. But I think in a perfect world, the Giants would like their quarterback room to include Eli Manning, Ryan Nassib, and close the door on that.
Now, yesterday, Tom, I could tell you, it seemed as though Kellen Davis was the temporary number one guy on the tight end depth chart. How temporary is that? How wide open of a competition is this? And how important is what we're seeing from these tight ends over the next few weeks up until veteran minicamp to determining where we're going to be when training camp comes into the summer?
I think a lot of it's going to depend on how they want to use that tight end position. Kellen Davis, obviously a better blocker.
Right.
Known for that. If they want to split somebody out wide a little bit or maybe from an H-back position, then you get into Adrian Robinson. And you know, he's going to have to put up or shut up this year. This is a big year for him. It's his third year. It's now or never, really, for him. He hasn't had an NFL catch yet. He's came into the team with all this promise and the hype, and of course the big headline and grabbing quote from the general manager calling him the JPP of tight ends, and so far he's done nothing, and part of that is because of injury, and part of that is because it was hard to break into the offense and learn the scheme and the system, but now everybody gets a clean slate with the new coordinator, so we'll see what Adrian Robinson is able to do. Obviously he's more adept at catching the ball and using his athleticism than he is at blocking, but he's going to have to do a little bit of both for the Giants. And I think if the offense works the way that it's been advertised to work, they'll take advantage of the personnel rather than try and shoehorn the personnel into the offense.
By the way, did you notice that during the post-draft press conferences, multiple times both Jerry Reese and Mark Russ and Tom Coughlin were asked, if you would compare this player to somebody in your roster, who'd you compare them to? They never gave
never.
An answer.
Nope. That was by design. I also noticed that Jerry Reese, when they drafted Reuben Randall, had called him NFL ready.
Yep.
But with Odell Beckham, it was almost NFL ready. So... there's definitely an awareness of that those words have a tendency to hang in the air for a couple of years, especially if they're wrong.
Final question. We're joined by Tom Rock from Newsday. Tom, just want to kind of touch on the injury situation because in the division we already have a huge injury. Mm-hmm. Sean Lee out for the year with the knee. As of now, it would appear that this Giants team, you know, pending David Wilson and Will Beatty, appear to be relatively healthy. And it seems to me that, you know, I'm sure you get the questions too. What's the Giants' record going to be? Are they going to win the division? half it's going to depend on who's left standing
right.
in the next 2.5 months when you get to week one when they play the Lions on Monday Night Football, week one of the season.
Right. We don't even know who's going to be on the roster. We don't know who the starting line's going to be, offense or defense, really. There's a lot of games to be played, a lot of practices to be had, a lot of preseason games to be played, five preseason games to be played this year, which increases the chance of injury for everybody. At this point in the season, it's a fool's game to try and predict what their record is going to be based on the limited information that you have, which is really just the schedule at this point, and a little bit of awareness about what other teams are and where they're at in their own development.
Hey, Tom, I got two calls on the line. Shall I take a couple calls?
Sure, let's go.
Awesome. 201-939-4513. Oliver's out in Denver, Colorado. Oliver, good morning. Thanks for holding, pal.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
No problem.
Just got a question for you guys. I've been looking at the evaluation, and now that you guys are touching on Adrian Robinson, guys' comparison, like Julius Thomas, Vernon Davis, those guys really, like, exploded in their third year. Do you think Adrian Robinson can do that?
Well, I think the Vernon Davis comparison is a little out of control. He was a first-round pick. I think the Julius Thomas one is probably the one that you'd want to focus on. And, look, I think a lot of Julius Thomas's eruption probably had to do with the arrival of Peyton Manning. That helps, when he comes on your team adds to it. Look, Adrian Robinson has the physicality. I don't think you like the fact that the first time he met the media, Tom, he talks about how he was overweight and he had to lose weight to get down to his playing weight. Injury issues in the past, maybe some issues in learning the playbook in the past. I think you're right. It's a put up or shut up, do or die year for him. It's time.
I think you look at a lot of players, and Oliver just mentioned the third year. The third year is a big year for an NFL player, because the first year is sort of you're swimming and you're trying to get everything in, and then the second year you're finally immersed in the system throughout the off season and you take advantage of it. The third year is when all of a sudden players start to realize, wow, my rookie contract is halfway over here, and I haven't caught a pass in Adrian Robinson's
true.
Case. I'm going to be a free agent in a year and a half, or honestly, in Adrian Robinson's case, he could be a free agent in 6 months. It becomes a spark for these guys, and they start to realize that their lifespan in this league is not very long, and they've already gone through 2 years of playing in the league. So, I think the third year is definitely a big year for a lot of players. Not everybody lives up to that. Certainly, we've seen some players. Not everybody gets the opportunity to live up to it, first of all, and we've seen some players step up to the plate in their third year.
Oliver, you got anything for us?
One more question. Now that the draft is over, and then next up is we're a few minutes away from, it seems like, training camp. What's you guys' grade on the Giants offseason?
Oof. I'd have to give them a B plus or an A minus. I think they filled a lot of holes, especially on defense, Tom, and in the draft they addressed a lot of their holes on offense.
I really liked what they did on defense. I really liked the way they bolstered their secondary. They brought in a guy who you thought was going to be a starting cornerback, and then you trumped him and you pushed him to your nickelback, and I'm talking about Walter Thurman and then Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie. So I really like what they did in their secondary. There's going to be I'm curious to see what happens on the defensive line. They lost a lot of established talent there, and they're going to rely on a lot of guys to have bounce back years. But that's going to be interesting. So obviously offensive line, they filled some holes. I'd give them a B right now.
Awesome. Hey guys, thanks for having me. Look forward to seeing you close to the regular season.
Thanks, Oliver. Appreciate the call, man. 201-939-4513. I haven't heard from this guy in a while. Big Ed's in Maryland. What's going on, Big Ed?
What's up? How you guys doing this morning,
doing
man?
Right,
how
Big
you doing,
Ed?
Big Johnny?
Doing right,
all
man.
Right, all right, man. Yeah, buddy. I saw you guys break camp, go to work yesterday for the first time, man, and I know that's like what the feel is like around it now, Big John.
Big Ed, it was good to be back on the practice field and watching guys actually do some football stuff. I feel like it's been a very long time.
Yeah. I'm not even going to give any predictions right now. Not even going to go that far, even starting anything like that, but I just want to find out, how's the camaraderie now as opposed to, you know, I know this is still like, you know, beginning of OTA, so like, what's the camaraderie like?
Well, you know, Big Ed, I'll say this. You know, they haven't really given us much access to the locker room, and Tom hasn't been in there once since this new group of guys has come in here. But I'll say this. I think the offense is still trying to figure each other out. I think the defense, even with all those new pieces, it really feels like to me that that group just gravitates around Anchorol and John Beeson. And those guys are so tight, Tom, and they're so much on the same page that they're going to lead that defense. I'm not worried about the teamwork and the chemistry on the defensive side of the ball at all.
They make it easy to follow them.
They do.
And that's not always common because sometimes you have quiet leaders. And we had Justin Tuck here, and he was a great leader, but he was a quiet leader. And some teams respond to that, and some players respond to that, but not everybody does. And I think Antrell Roll and John Beeson are the kind of leaders that everyone responds to. And you look at them, and they're a close relationship, and then you throw in Dominique Rogers-Cromartie, who has a relationship with Antrell Roll, and now you have three players who should be your best defensive players who are a tight relationship with each other, and I think that's really going to pay dividends for the defense this season.
And big offensively, I'll say this: you know, there's a lot of questions to whether or not Chris Neat can last. I think his presence as a binding agent on that offensive line, even if he ends up not playing a ton this year, I think his presence here and trying to transition this to the new group of guys is really invaluable.
Okay. Hey, now, how do you feel about this offensive line? Do you think we got enough depth? Because we got hit so hard last year on that line. Do we have enough depth to make it through?
I think the question isn't the depth. I think the question is the quality at the top, and we're going to have to see what those guys bring. J.D. Walton and Jeff Schwartz and Rick Berg and you know, some of the other
Will Beattie.
Guys.
I mean,
Will Beattie.
He's
what's
probably the
what's
bigger
he gonna
question?
Yeah,
yeah, right, right.
Right. I think they did a good job.
Tackle.
Right. Well, he's potentially the starting left tackle, but even who even knows?
Yeah.
I mean, if he comes back midway through training camp, and you know, somebody else is in that position, maybe Pugh's taking snaps over at left tackle, and he's lights out.
Awesome.
How do you put Will Beattie back in? You know, with no practice.
Yeah.
It's gonna be interesting.
He's gonna have to do something.
Well,
I kind of like the idea of him being center last year. You know what I mean? You kind of need that big center just to complement. It's like what I was seeing for it, just taking from a little bit. It's like if you do Q on the outside, you know, and Beattie in the middle, because Speed's still coming back from the injury, so he's still gonna need some time, you know, before he's really acclimated and then fully ready to go.
You know, Big Ed, I hear you. Here's the problem. The way Will Beattie's built, his skill set, his talent, his athleticism, his position's left tackle. I'm not even sure if he can move over and play right tackle,
I don't think he could.
I don't think he's strong enough. I think Beattie's your left tackle, and if he's not your left tackle, he's not playing.
Yeah, there's no way he can move inside and play guard. And that's one of the things that they loved about Pugh when they drafted him last year was his versatility. And you know, they put him and started him out as tackle. But I always kind of had an eye on him as the heir to Chris Snee at
right?
guard.
Yeah.
And I always thought that was a distinct possibility for him. But
oh, we lost Big Ed there.
Well, see Ed. But I'll finish answering his question. You know, I always thought that was a possibility, and I think the Giants still view that as a possibility to move Pugh inside, to move him to the left. You know, he can play four of the five positions on the offensive line, so that's certainly something good to have in your back pocket.
Our final call of the show is Len in Columbia, Maryland. Len, good morning. Good to hear from you. You're on with Johnny Schmelke and Tom Rock from Newsday. What's up, Len?
Hey, thanks for taking my call, and Tom is always a good listen. Great to be on with him. Tom, I just want to warn you of one thing. John tolerates my numbers that I throw out at him and all my forecasts.
Okay.
I'm probably going to bore Tom with all these, but here we go. You know, I would agree with you guys that there are a lot of uncertainties and on this team for next year. But you know, when we talk about a lot, I think we're really talking about. You know, count them with 10 fingers as to who the last guys are going to be to make this team. I mean, I think we can name 40 guys who are going to make this team already. And so let me start with one of the certainties, probably the biggest of the certainties, barring injury, is of course Eli. And here's what I'm hoping for. And John, I just want to warn you. You know I'm going to call before the I'm going to call at least one more time before the year is out. But I got some numbers, and I'm going to stick to these numbers with Eli. I want to see Eli, for first of all, play 16 games. And secondly, I'm looking for 65%, you know, rating completion average.
Now, Len, he has not been at 65% in some time now.
I'm looking for, on this, and with this new offense, I'm looking for 65%.
Now, Len, actually, I'm thinking about it. Has he been over 65% more than once in his career, Eli? It might have been only back in 2011 that he was over 65, now that I think about it.
I think that's probably accurate. There may have been one other time, but let's go with the one.
Okay.
I mean, I'll go along with you on the one.
But you're right. His completion percentage might naturally go up if this is a passing system that you rely on more, the short pass.
More short passes, more sure things, sure.
That's what I'm hoping for from Eli. I'm looking for 30 touchdowns. I'm looking for 3,800 yards. I'm looking for no more than 12 interceptions.
Oh, by the way, Len, I just want to give you a heads up. The Eli's highest career completion percentage was 62.9. That was in 2010. So he has actually never hit 65 before.
65.
John, you got to have a goal. you got to have a goal. And, you know, a lot of times we don't reach our goals. These are the things I'm laying out there for you.
I got you.
And I'm looking for no more than 15 sacks. No more than 12 interceptions. No more than 15 sacks. I got it written down on a piece of paper, 375 completions, and I'm going 85 Cruz, 60 Randall, 50 Beckham, 50 out of the tight ends, and you know I've been consistent on this, John. I'm going with 100 out of the running backs and the fullbacks, and there's probably another 25 to make up from those numbers, but I'm looking for 360 to 375 on the completions. And John, I'm going to stick to those numbers all year long.
Who are the 50? Who of the 50 for the tight ends? Who do you think is going to get the most of them?
I think Robinson's going to shine.
Yeah.
And he may not get all of them, but I think combined, you know, three tight ends, I think we can get 50. You know, I think we can get the 50 receptions.
See, Len, I think realistically you're going to look at more like 100 to 110 catches between your running backs and your tight ends. I think, you know, maybe 110 between those two positions put together, I think that's probably more realistic.
Okay. All right. Well, you know, everybody's got their numbers. Those are going to be mine for the year. And, John, let me ask you a quick question,
sure.
John. Did you have any a chance to look up that stat that I asked about yesterday?
I did not. I still have it written down on my pad. How many possessions were three downs or less last year? I have not had a chance to look that up yet. But I know there were more than the Giants would have liked. Let me put it that way.
Does Tom have a guess at that?
Oh, boy.
I'm going to say probably around 20% of them.
Maybe a little more.
Yeah.
You know, if we had 100, 175 to 190 possessions, 20%, you know, that's a lot of possessions in which we went three or out. And of course, as John reminded me yesterday, first play, first game,
right, interception
of the season last year was.
You had a lot of
less than three downs, and we were off the field.
There was a lot of possessions like that, you know.
Where you
were hoping for a three and out and punt, and that would be a success because at least they didn't turn the ball over deep in their own territory.
And, Len, frankly, whenever the Giants had a series where Eli Manning got sacked, they were usually three and out. The way that Giants team was put together last year, it was hard for them to overcome a 6 or 7 or 8 yard loss on a sack.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my. I bet the numbers, you know, just hearing you guys for the last 30 seconds, I'll bet it was more than 20%.
We're convinced you.
There were a lot of those. We can't face another season like that. But Eli's going to rebound. I'm looking for the big year, guys. Hey, listen, thanks for taking my call. And, Tom, good to talk to you.
Okay,
thanks for
tolerating me. All right, buddy. Take care.
All right, Tom, I have one theoretical question I asked on Twitter the other day. I thought it was a good question, and I didn't have a good answer for it, and I still don't. If in this theoretical draft both Akeem Nicks and Odell Beckham Jr. were on the board when the Giants are picking this year, and this is Nicks as they evaluated him as a rookie and Beckham as a rookie, who do you think the Giants thought was a better player coming out of school? And I did not have a good answer for it. You'd think Beckham, because Knicks was obviously a later round, first round pick, later in the round. But he's bigger. He's got more size.
I think the size.
I know.
I think the size of Knicks. I think Knicks is a better prospect just based on that, because that's on his measurables. You know, I don't know that Knicks has the speed that Beckham has. He didn't have the special teams capabilities, which is something that the Giants weighed on with him.
It's tough, right? It's a good question.
You know, this was such a personality-driven draft for the Giants too this year. They made such a big deal about getting the right types of guys in here.
And frankly, safer picks without a lot of injury risks as well.
Yes, yes. I think they probably Knicks. I think probably Knicks. But it would have been close, right? It would have been close. That's a good question.
Tom, appreciate the time, my friend.
John,
always
thanks
fun.
For having me. That's glad I came in early today.
And we'll see you on the practice field.
I'll see you in a little bit, yeah.
Let's get out there. Okay. Tom Hawk from Newsday, appreciate it. 201-939-4513. Good job on the phones, guys. I'm going to go through a couple Twitter questions before I say goodbye. Ty Easy, how much did you see 11 personnel compared to previous years? Already talked about that. Walter Thurmond, he was out there at OTAs. Jason, that's from @JPhil, #GiantsChat. He was out there, and he actually played outside a lot more than I thought. He wasn't primarily in the slot. He played outside a bit. Patrick Wallace, @WallPatR. How did Nassib look? He was out there, got a lot of snaps, completed some passes. He did throw one pick to Dan Fox, but he was out there. Ollie Jackson, had a DRC and the rest of the defense look? Were they flying around? They were flying around. They looked fast. DRC actually knocked down a couple of passes to the perimeter. David Rochester, did Tino send in his RSVP yet? Yes, he did. Not showing up. So, Dave, next time he's on, you can go in there and give Tino some crap for that, which I thought was kind of funny. Let's see. Sonny Boy, I'd rather have Hillis on the field instead of two fullbacks. I agree. I think Hillis could be an option in that full house backfield. Ollie Jackson, why was John Jerry not on the field yesterday? Is it because he did not go through the mental evaluation first? You know what? I'm not sure why John Jerry wasn't out there yesterday. I think we'll find that out today. A revitalized JPP. He looked good yesterday. Certainly looked excellent. BD Sandwich, Nass will get most of the snaps because they will try to shop him for a future draft pick. Here's the problem. You're not going to be able to trade him off what he does in practice. Other teams can't see that. He's going to have to do something in games. So there you go. Dave Schwartz, please limit Lent to one call a week. Sorry, Dave, I love Lent. I'm not going to do that. Stu DeMeglio thinks the Giants could have gotten a starting wide receiver in the second round. I don't think he would have gotten one that's as good as Odell Beckham, not even close. And I know for a fact the Giants felt that too. He thought Beckham was head and shoulders above the other wide receivers still on the board. Let's see. I don't understand this in from @port4949, so I can't go in there. Let's see. What else do we got here? That's about it for the questions on Twitter. Good job online. Good job on the phones, folks. We'll be with you tomorrow morning as we wrap up what happened on OTA number 2 on Thursday. Everyone, thanks for joining us. Have a great day. We'll see you tomorrow morning. Have a good Thursday. Adios.